said, well, my name's Elijah Day, minister of the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation on the south of 12th Hour, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is July 10th, 2017, or it's the 25th day of the 4th month, 2021. We will start our second service today with a song entitled, "'Tis So Sweet to Trust in Yahshua." It is so sweet to trust in Yahshua, just to take Him at His word, just to rest upon His promise, just to know the Sabbath of Yahshua, Yahshua, though I trust Him, though I prove Him o'er and o'er. Yahshua, Yahshua, precious Yahshua, oh, for grace to trust Him, Lord. Oh, how sweet to trust in Yahshua, just to trust His cleansing blood. Just in simple faith it blinds me with the healing cleansing flood. Yahshua, Yahshua, now I trust Him, for I prove Him o'er and o'er. Yahshua, Yahshua, precious Yahshua, who for grace to trust Him, Lord. Yes, tis sweet to trust in Yahshua, just from sin itself to see. Just from Yahshua simply taking life and rest and joy and peace. Yahshua, Yahshua, I trust Him, I prove Him o'er and o'er. Yahshua, Yahshua, precious Yahshua, oh, for grace to trust Him more. I'm so glad I learned to trust Thee, precious Yahshua, Savior, friend. And I know that Thou art with me, will be with me to the end. Yahshua, Yahshua, how I trust Him, how I prove Him o'er and o'er. Yahshua, Yahshua, precious Yahshua, oh, for grace to trust Him more.
The prophecy of the Daniel Revelation, part 3. We're in Shepherd Rod, volume 2. We're on page 71. And the title for today's subject is "A Church of the Yahweh and the Symbol of a Woman." And there appeared a great one in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars, and she being a child, cried, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his head, and his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them onto the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was called up unto Yahweh and unto His throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, for she had a place prepared of Yahweh, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Revelation 12:1-6. Note that the objects shown in the vision were in heaven, not on the earth. Therefore, whatever these symbols may imply, they must be of a heavenly origin. Again, note that her only clothing is the sun, and that her crown is composed solely of 12 stars. Observe that she is not standing on the moon, for the Revelator said she had the moon under her feet. We must carefully study the character of these symbols, for thus only can we learn their significance. Also mark that she was to be delivered of a man-child, and that the same was called upon the Yahweh and under his throne. It is an admitted fact that the child was Yahshua, who ascended on high after his resurrection, Mark 16:19. But the symbol being of the heavenly origin, the woman cannot represent Mary, the mother of Yahshua, but she denotes the congregation woman that was to bring forth or into which Yahshua was to be born. Thus John in the vision was looking back beyond the birth of Yahshua. It had been taught by some that the woman is a symbol of the apostolic congregation, and that the moon under her feet is to denote the Mosaic dispensation or sacrificial ceremonial system that had passed away, and being clothed with the sun to mean the glory of the gospel and the new dispensation. According to the following, these claims prove incorrect. If the woman represents the apostolic congregation of the apostles, how could the same congregation, woman, travail in the birth with the Yahshua, by whom the church was founded 30 years later? If we say she represents the Jewish congregation, how could she fly into the wilderness and remain there from 538 to 1798 in the Christian dispensation? If the moon under her feet indicate the end of the Mosaic sacrificial system, why did it not end before the birth of Yahshua, since the moon stood under her feet before he was born? If it had ended at that time, could it have been a symbol of the death of Yahshua? If her garment of sunlight is a symbol of the gospel, or the Yahshua, Y-A-H-S-P-E-L, I'm going to put in Yah's name in front of the word gospel, Yahshua, in the apostolic dispensation, it says Christian here, how could the congregation woman be clothed with it years before the gospel dispensation began, having been clothed with it before the child was born? Which one of the two churches, Jewish or Christian, gave birth unto the Yahshua? If it were the Jewish congregation, then how could the light with which she was clothed be applied unto the Christian church, or the apostolic congregation of the Nazarene? If these questions cannot be answered, then we are obliged to go deeper into the subject. The idea advanced that the woman is a symbol of the apostolic congregation only, and the moon of the Jewish ceremonial system, proves incorrect. The apostolic congregation was founded about 31 A.D., or not earlier than 27 A.D., at which time Yahshua began to preach, being about 30 years of age. That's when the apostolic congregation was founded as well. Or was it at the crucifixion? Let's see what B.T. Hodder says more on this. Therefore, the symbol points back at least 31 years before the beginning of the apostolic congregation, for the woman congregation was traded in birth and pain to be delivered. Thus it was the Jewish congregation that brought forth the Son of Yahweh, and not the apostolic congregation of the Nazarene. Therefore she, the Jewish congregation, being with child, cried, travailing in birth and pain to be delivered. That is, the promise was made unto Israel that the Messiah was to be born through that nation, by that particular congregation, woman, for the old dragon, knowing the channel through which the child was to come, closely watched with the intention of destroying the promised one as soon as he was born. It was then that the dragon, by the hand of the Herod, slew all the children that were in the Bethlehem and in all the coasts thereof, hoping to do away with the coming king. See Matthew 2:16. For the evidence proves that the symbol of the woman takes in both periods, B.C. and A.D. Therefore, as the moon was under her feet before the birth of Yahshua, it must be a symbol of a period of time which had preceded the Jewish church, as the woman was clothed with the sun before she brought forth the child. It is evident that the symbol clothed with the sun was fulfilled before the birth of Yahshua. If the moon is symbolical, then the symbol of the sun must be the main object, for the moon depends on the sun for life, and the woman was clothed with it. Thus, sun and moon must be taken into consideration. In Genesis 1:16, we are told that the sun and the moon are to rule the day and the night. The sun, therefore, must denote a period into which Yahweh's congregation had been given great light, and the moon must be a symbol of the preceding period. The great light cannot be the gospel of the Yahshua in the New Testament. Neither can the moon represent the ceremonial system under the Jewish economy. For the woman was clothed with the sun, and the moon was under her feet, while the ceremonial system was yet in existence, for the child was born after the woman had been clothed with the sun. Yahshua himself, by eating the Passover just before his crucifixion, established the fact that the ceremonial law was still in existence 34 years after his birth. See Matthew 26:18-21. If the above statement is correct, then we must find two such periods that would perfectly fit the symbol. The first is the one before the Bible came into existence, and the second is the one with the Bible, clothed with the light, the written word of Yahweh. Thus, symbolically, the first period may be called night, ruled by the moon, and the second day ruled by the sun. Therefore, the woman clothed with the sun and travailing with child is a period after Israel went out of Egypt, and at that time the period without the Bible, moon, was passing away. We shall bring forth another proof from a different angle, making doubly sure of the idea that the woman represents both periods before and after Yahshua. Revelation 12:14 states, "And unto the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness and to her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and a half a time." From the face of the serpent, note that she was given two wings of a great eagle. If the wings were not symbolical, what is their object? Or what was their object? As the wings of the lion and the four-headed leopard of the Daniel 7 represented periods, as previously explained on pages 33 to 34, then the two great wings must denote two great periods of the church history. The eagle being the king of birds, and as it is emphasized that they were of a great eagle. It is evident that the symbol must apprehend each period from its beginning. Thus, one of the wings takes in the entire church history from the fall of Adam to the crucifixion of the Yahshua, and the other from his crucifixion unto the end of this present world, his second coming. Thus it proves that there is only one true congregation in all ages. Patriarchs. Okay, her crown of 12 stars originally represented the 12 patriarchs and later the 12 tribes. after they went out of Egypt, at which time the wonderful light shining from the written word of the Yahweh, the Bible, clothed the church woman while she was travailing with the child, the promise of the Messiah. But the crown of the 12 stars in the New Testament period stands for the 12 apostles. Number 12 is a symbol of government. Yahshua said unto them, "He also shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel." Matthew 19:28. This fact is proven by the type of the 12 tribes. It will be noticed that in the reckoning of the tribes of the spiritual Israel, 144,000 by the type Israel after flesh, as in the Revelation 7:5-8, the tribe of Dan is missing, and instead the tribe of Manasseh, the firstborn son of the Joseph, is numbered. The type corresponds perfectly with the antitype for Judas Iscariot being one of the 12 apostles, who is cast aside, of whom Dan is a figure. And in his stead, Paul of Tarsus was added, of whom Manasseh is a figure. Therefore, we see perfect harmony in type and antitype. The lesson in this instance by these unmistakable symbols teaches that Yahweh has had only one congregation, one truth, and one way of salvation for all generations. The same is also expressed in the words of the Paul. There is one body and one spirit, even as you are called, and one hope of your calling, one Yahshua, one faith, one baptism, one Elohim, and Father of all. Ephesians 4:4-6. Yahweh's congregation has been symbolized also by the earthly objects, for we speak of the symbols by the woman, namely Hagar and Sarah. The former is a symbol of the Jewish, and the latter of the apostolic congregation. See the Shepherd Rod, volume 1, page 136. These earthly symbols point our congregation, our Elohim's congregation, in the different sections and conditions. But the woman, clothed with the sun and her eagle's wing, being of the heavenly origin, denote Elohim's true congregation, truth, in one continuous line, and her child, our only Savior and Redeemer in both periods, before and after Yahshua. The crown of the 12 stars in the New Testament period, John's vision in the 12th chapter of Revelation deals with the two main subjects, namely the woman clothed with the sun and the red dragon. The latter has been explained. See pages 65-69. For the symbol of the woman in the New Testament time covers three divisions. First, the apostolic period. Second, her absence from the civilization in the wilderness for 1260 days, years of the papal persecution. Revelation 12:6-14. Third, the last period of the church while in the conflict with the dragon. Revelation 12:15-17. The first and second period shall be explained in a connection with another study. An explanation of the third period is found in the Shepherd Rod, volume 1, page 151-152. Here for our intention. And this chapter is to briefly visualize the lesson taught by the about her crown of the 12 stars. We ask the question, who appointed these present-day self-styled apostolic authorities? It is said that after the apostles passed away, another set of the same number have a right to be apostles. Suppose the claim is true. There are hundreds of churches. And if each one of them had 12 apostles, there would be a multiplicity of thousands of them at one time. And if that act had been repeated in every age, there would be an innumerable multitude of apostles at the appearance of Yahshua. If there had been thousands of apostles, it is evident by the following scripture that they shall never enter into the city of Yahweh as apostles. For inspiration says, and the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and in them the name of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. Revelation 21:14. What is the difference between an apostle and a minister of the gospel? If there is no difference, then there should have been more than 12 apostles in the earlier congregation, for there were more than 12 engaged in the ministry. They sure had appointed 12, but Judas was counted out, leaving only 11. After Yahshua sent on high, the 11 agreed to appoint another in Judas's place. And the lot fell on Matthias, and he was numbered with the 11 apostles, the Acts 1:26. Therefore, they made up the number. Now if Matthias took Judas's place, then there must be 13 such men according to Romans 1:1. Paul, a servant of the Yahshua Messiah, called him an apostle, separated into the gospel of Yahweh. Mark carefully that the woman's crown has only 12 shards, and in the foundation of the city there are only the names of the 12 apostles. Which one of the two, Matthias or Paul, is not recognized by him who laid the precious foundation of the holy city? If we say Paul, we make him a law. If we say Matthias, then his ordination by the 11 had no effect in appointing an apostle. What then? In the Acts 1:26 is the first and last we hear of Matthias, but not so of Paul. If Matthias is the apostle, then he surely is not as worthy as Paul. Which one of the ordinations would be the most honorable? Is it Paul's, by the Yeshua himself, as he met him on the day to Damascus, or Matthias, by the hands of the apostles? The question is clear. No man's hands are qualified to ordain an apostle, regardless of his high standing in connection with the gospel. The holy hands of Yahshua and his personal presence only can appoint one for such an office. This is unimpeachable evidence, for the woman has a crown of only 12 stars. Therefore, who has the power to ordain another and thus multiply the stars? What is an apostle answer? One that is separated unto the gospel of Yahweh. But if this is the only meaning of the title, then all who are engaged in the proclamation of the gospel, being separated, must be apostles. Therefore, the word apostle must have a special significance and a deeper meaning than simply separated unto the gospel of the Yahweh. For the apostle Paul was called to be an apostle for the Gentiles. Thus he with the 11 became the earthly founders of the congregation of the Gentiles, and Yahshua as the divine head. Speaking of the gifts in the congregation, apostles are the first, for without a founder there would be no organization. Thus the rest of the gifts follow. See 1 Corinthians 12:28. For the crown is her glory, and the stars, 12 apostles, are her only earthly authority. Here is a striking evidence that the present-day apostles are falsely so-called. A prophet may claim authority as a prophet, but never as an apostle. However, there is a difference between the prophets of the Old Testament and the ones of the New, the latter being under the authority of the former. In other words, he may be an interpreter or revealer of the Bible, for all the prophets in the law, ceremonial, and type prophesied to John. Matthew 11:13. Interpretation is correct only when inspired by the same Spirit. Thus, time the utterances are revealed. Not only do the annals of the history prove this, but the Bible is very emphatic on the subject. For it plainly says that we are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets. Yeshua Messiah himself being the chief cornerstone. Ephesians 2:20. Again we read, howbeit, when he, the Spirit of the truth, is come, he will guide you into all truth. For he shall not speak of himself, but whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak, and he will show you things to come. John 16:13. Where is the need for such apostles? Are not the words of the apostles in the Bible? If we should appoint a set of such men, would we not set aside the woman and her 12-star crown? If we set aside the crown by the voluntary election of the apostles, what will we do with the gospel committed unto the congregation by the assent ordained apostles? Hear the authority by the crown of the star. But though we are an angel from heaven, preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. As he said before, so say I now again. If any man preach any other gospel to you than that you have received, let him be accursed. Galatians 1:8-9. And the meaning of Yahshua, it means that Yahweh spelled it out in the law of Moses. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Yahshua. 2 Corinthians 11:13. The world is filled with so-called apostles and sects of every kind. Is it not? Is it time for Yahweh's people to fall on their knees before their Creator and study the Scriptures for themselves, that they may know what is the truth? Why should one accept the decision of another? By so doing, we are robbed of an experience of our own. If so, may we not ask the question, what is the future outlook of the world? No one is saved because he may admit the evidence of the truth, or because he may be belong to the right congregation or creed. It is only by an experience of his own, based upon evidence of the truth received into the heart, that can renew the mind and regenerate the soul so that he can walk in the newness of life. It is utterly impossible to enter into the kingdom of Yeshua without a personal touch of the divine glory. Yeshua said, verily, verily, I say unto you, unto thee, except the man be born again, he cannot enter and cannot see the kingdom of Yahweh. John 3:3. For the following scriptures bear the same evidence. For he is not a Jew which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh, but he is a Jew which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart and the spirit, and not in the letter. Whose praise is not of men, but of Yahweh. Romans 2:28-29. Okay, it says, for the circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing, but the keeping of the commandments of Yahweh. 1 Corinthians 7:19. And rend your hearts and not your garments, and turn unto Yahweh your Elohim, for he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and of a great kindness, and repenteth him of the evil. Joel 2:13. For they that are such serve not of Savior Yahshua Messiah, but their own belly, and by good words and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple. Romans 16:18. Returning unto original thought, for the 11 were allowed to perform the ordination of Messiah. For less to this present day, with this new model religion, showing that Yahweh has committed to no man apostolic authority save to the 12. The commission to the ministry is, go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. Observe all things. Whatsoever command you, and lo, I am with you always, even at the end of the world. Matthew 28:19-20. So thou, O Son of Man, I have set thee a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore thou shalt hear the word at my mouth, and warn them for me. When I say unto the wicked, O wicked man, thou shalt surely die, If thou dost not speak to warn the wicked from his way, that wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at thine hand. Ezekiel 33:7-8. In reality, the 12 stars on the woman's crown originally represented the 12 patriarchs, later the 12 tribes of Israel. After that, the 12 apostles, and last, the 12 tribes of the spiritual Israel, the 144,000. Thus again, it proves number 4 to be an important number, and that by the woman, these 4 periods are represented. Yahweh, who foresaw the selfishness of men and commanded the prophet to write the following: you eat the fat, you clothe you with the wool, you kill them that are fed, but you feed not the flock. The disease have ye not strengthened, neither have you healed that which was sick, neither have you bound up that which was broken, neither have you brought again that which was driven away, neither have you sought that which was lost. But with force and with cruelty have you ruled them, and they were scattered because there was no shepherd, and they became meat unto all the beasts of the field when they were scattered. My sheep wandered through all the mountains and upon every high hill, yea, my flock was scattered upon all the face of the earth, and none did search or seek after them. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh. As I live, saith the Yahweh Elohim, surely because my flock became a prey, and my flock became meat unto every beast of the field, because there was no shepherd, neither did my shepherd search for my flock, but the shepherds fed themselves, and fed not my flock. Therefore, O ye shepherds, hear the word of the Yahweh. Thus saith the Yahweh Elohim, behold, I am against thee, against the shepherd, and I will require my flock at their hand, and cause them to cease from feeding the flock. Neither shall the shepherds feed themselves any more, for I will deliver my flock from their mouth, that they may not be meat for them. For thus saith Yahweh Elohim, behold, I will go search my sheep and seek them out. Ezekiel 34:3-11. As a comparison, the Spirit of Yahweh drew a little picture from the flock of the sheep and shepherd. Yahweh's people as the flock, and the ministry as the shepherd. Yahweh's true people will imitate the sheep, and his watchmen will imitate the good shepherd who cares for his sheep. Anything less than this is an abomination in Yahweh's sight. If we are to learn the lesson intended, we must first acquire a clear understanding of the type shepherds and flock, for the antitype ministers and church members are asked to copy after the pattern. For the picture is drawn from the ancient method of the herding of the flock, the open pasture of the mountains and the hills required the shepherd's continual care over the sheep. The vast territory drew the sheep and the shepherds a considerable distance from the home, and the continual movement over the landscape made it impossible to obtain a permanent shelter of any kind for the sheep or shepherd. Consequently, other help was needed. Each shepherd had a certain number of dogs depending on the size of the flock for the safety of the sheep from man and beast. And one thing called for another, as ass was used to carry the necessary supplies for the sheep, dogs and shepherd. These consisted of clothing, night coverings, food for the shepherds as well as for the dogs, medicine, bandages, etc. A faithful animal carried the load on his back throughout each day of the year. At the end of the day, the shepherd found his sheep. If one was missing, he went to search for it at once, as it was not safe for one to wander apart from the flock. For the excellent condition of the sheep was the evidence of the shepherd's fidelity and worthiness of his hire. He not only had to seek good pasture, but act as a veterinarian as well. Often the sheep would break his leg, and it was the shepherd's duty to skillfully sit, splinter, and bandage the wound. In traveling over the rough surface of the land, where there were rocks and brush. Accidents were frequent. Sometimes a thorn would prick the flesh or other minor injury occur. That probably caused no pain and would not be noticed by the shepherd. Yet a fly might have deposited her eggs in the open sower, and larvae would soon develop and work their way under the skin and into the bone. This was a common occurrence. At such a time, the shepherd's attention to turn to the ailment of the sheep, and he must then give its special care and bandage the wounds. When a lamb or even a sheep was sick and too weak to follow the flock, it was the shepherd's duty to care for and carry them. If he should have a lamb in his arm, a mother sheep is constantly by his side, gazing at and speaking unto it. These noble creatures care, feed, and keep their lambs spotlessly clean. Are you mothers doing as much for your children? Are you shepherds, ministers of the flock of Yahweh, doing all the ancient shepherd did for his sheep? Or do you feed and care for yourselves more than you do for the flock of Yahweh? Are you worthy of your harm? The ancient shepherd had to give a complete account of the flock, even unto the smallest detail. Do you think Yahweh will require less of you? Are not his sheep of much greater value? David risked his life for the lamb, for a lamb, but Yahweh delivered him from the lion and the bear. David, for Yahweh's honor and for the safety of his people, endangered his own life, faced the giant Goliath, but Yahweh delivered the Philistines into David's hands and made David king over his nation. Do you think he will do less for you if you too imitate the good shepherd? Said Yahshua, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep, but he that is an hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the shepherd or not, seeth the wolf coming, and leaveth the sheep and fleeth, and the wolf catches them, and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth because he is an hireling, and careth not for the sheep. I am a good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. John 10:11-15. Said to Yahshua, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep, but he that is an hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the shepherd or not, seeth the wolf coming, and leaveth the sheep, and fleeth, and the wolf catches them and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth because he is an hireling, and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine, and the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father. I lay down my life for the sheep. John 10:11-15. For the prophet Isaiah, looking forward unto the present day condition, says, yea, they are ready, greedy dogs, which can never have enough, and they are shepherds that cannot understand. They are all look unto their own way, every one for his gain from his quarter. Isaiah 56:11. Okay, let's go in now to the next subject is the leopard-like beast, page 85, volume 2 of the Shepherd's Rod. Revelation 13:1-10. For the nondescript beast of Daniel 7, representing Rome in his first stage, shows prophetically by his ten horns that there were 10 kings to arise out of Rome. In his second stage, it is shown that the papacy was to arise, subdue 3 kings, and wear out the saints of the Most High for the space of 1260 years. But it tells not of the fall of the Roman monarchy or the papacy. It is silent concerning the Reformation that came before or after 1798 A.D. Therefore, the lack of information about the symbols of this beast must be found somewhere else in the prophetic word of Yahweh. This must be sought in the book of Revelation, for it is the complement unto Daniel's prophecy. for the leopard like beast, Revelation 13, 1 to 10, is the only symbolical prophecy that tells of the fall of the Roman monarchs, the crowning of the ten kings, the wound of the papacy, the Reformation, and rise of the Protestantism, and the captivity of the Pope. Now I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. Revelation 13:1. Note, this beast has the same number of the horns as the nondescript in his first stage, Imperial Rome. Daniel said, the ten horns on the beast, representing Rome, are ten chains that shall arise. Daniel 7:24. The horns symbolizing the Roman world and its imperial state also pointed forward to the time when the empire would be divided into ten parts, or kingdoms. In other words, while the horns primarily represented the Roman world and its imperial form, they secondarily denote the present world and its divided state since the fall of Rome, corresponding with the ten toes on the great image of Daniel 2. The nondescript beast in his first stage has ten horns. As in his second stage, the little horn came up, and three of the ten were plucked up by the roots. It denotes that they can never be reinstated as king. The horns being reduced to the biblical number seven signified that the papacy was to have complete sway over the entire world as far as the apostolic congregation is concerned. Therefore, the ten horns on the leopard-like beast of the Revelation 13:1 cannot signify that the three uprooted ones have assumed their authority for the second time. As the same number of the horns appear on each succeeding beast, namely the nondescript, Daniel 7:7, the leopard lock of Revelation 13:1, and the scarlet color of Revelation 17:3, representing the entire New Testament era, it is evident by the facts gathered that the number of the horns are intended to denote universal, as they are absent from the beast of the Revelation 13:11-18. It verifies the fact that the two-horned beast denotes a local system. Therefore, it is unquestionably clear that the fixed number of the horns, 10, are designed to universally symbolize the peoples and governments. Follow the chart on page 84. And as much as a lion, the bear, the four-headed leopard, and the nondescript beast, the symbols of Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome, are linked to each other, the unbreakable chain of the beast makes it impossible for another universal beast system to intersect their consecutive order. Consequently, the leopard-like beast of the Revelation 13:1-9 must follow the nondescript beast of Rome. Revelation 13:2-3. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet was as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. So the dragon represents Satan, so Lucifer gave him his power. And so where did he, and he said, and his seat, said he gave. He gave him his seat at Washington, D.C. at the White House, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered at the beast. The composition of the beast reveals the fact that he is a descendant from the four beasts before him. The mouth of a lion, the feet of a bear, the body of a leopard, and the number of horns all point back to his hereditary characteristics as descending from the Babylon, Medo, Persia, Grecia, and Rome. Indisputable fact proves that he is the fifth universal being. The leopard-like beast arises out of the sea in the same manner as the four beasts before it, Daniel 7:3. In other words, they come from the old country to the United States, Daniel 7:3. Therefore, the beast of Revelation 13:1-9 is created from the result of war and commotion among the nations in the same manner as Babylon, Medo, Persia, Grecia, and Rome, since the evidence revealed by the symbol cannot be questioned. The leopard-like beast assumes the period after the fall of Imperial Rome, as the Catholic Church, corresponding to the feet and toe, iron and clay of the great image in Daniel 2. In other words, the leopard-like beast arrives at the closing period represented by the first stage of the nondescript beast, while the second stage of the latter papal Rome continues and up to 1798. Consequently, the unfolding process of the one overlaps the downward course of the other. Unto John, the leopard-like beast was shown not in its unfolding process, but rather in its closing act, for he says, and his deadly wound was healed. He saw in vision the beast after the deadly wound had been healed. For he uses the past tense what? But in Daniel's vision, the work of the nondescript beast was all in the future, said the prophet, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and take the same signs and laws. And they shall be given into his hand until the time and time, the divide of time, Daniel 7:25. Daniel in vision viewed the history of represented by the beast forward, while John looked backward. Or in other words, Daniel saw what the beast was to do, while John was shown what the beast had done. The crowns and the horns of the beast having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, John said, I saw one of his beasts as it were wounded death. The wounded head represents the papacy, wounded by the Martin Luther, which was originally symbolized by the horned head of the nondescript beast, showing only the papal power and the authority, but the leopard lie shows the papacy in her wounded state and the imprisonment of the Pope. Thus the two beasts, the nondescript and the leopard-like, overlap each other. From the fall of Imperial Rome in 1798. Therefore, while the nondescript beast in its second stage represents the papacy, she is secondarily described by the leopard-like. The one reveals the tyrannical authority, and the other describes her downfall. For the little horn was to have power and wear out the saints of the Most High for 1260 years, Daniel 7:25. But the leopard-like also opened his mouth in blasphemy, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. Revelation 13:6-5. The number of months is equivalent unto the time and times and the dividing of the 1260 days, years, figuring 30 days to the month, with the imprisonment of the Pope the 6th and his death on August 19, 1799. A certain transaction occurred between the nondescript and the leopard-like beast. The head and the horns were removed from one to the other, so to speak, and making the change, the little horn having the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things was transposed from horned head to a common wounded head, showing the papacy had lost her ecclesiastical authority and was no longer represented by a horned head combination of church and state. And that event terminated the prophetic period of the 1260 years of the Daniel 7:25 and Revelation 13:5. It completely crowned the horns of the leopard-like beast, signifying that the state is now independent of the church. The crowns on this horns denotes the fall of the Roman monarchy, showing that the ten chains, which were symbolized by the ten horns of the nondescript beast, have received their kingdom. Horns and heads all present. High John saw the beast having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns. Let us not overlook the fact that all horns, crowns, and heads are present on the beast. Therefore, whatever meaning is derived by the symbol, all must be in the existence at the time of his when his deadly wound is healed. Had it not been so, the symbols of the heads and the horns would have come one after another, as it was with the little horn and the other three that were plucked up from the nondescript beast of Daniel 7:7. A similar method is observed with the he-goat. That's the notable horn Alexander was broken off. Four came up to take his place, the four divisions of Grecia. And after these came up the exceeding great horn, which primarily represented Rome, Daniel 8:8-9. Where systems and governments do not all exist at the same time, the symbols show their consecutive order. Another fact to be noted, that every symbol of the entire procession of the beast points out facts that were to transpire within the period represented by each beast, and not one of them refers to anything in the past, save the hereditary ancestral characteristics. For the keeping of his commandments is the ticket unto heaven, to the law and to the testimony. If they speak not according to this word, it's because there's no light in them. Isaiah 8:20. Because the carnal mind is enmity against Yahweh, for it cannot be subject to the law of Yahweh. Neither indeed can be. Romans 8:7. He that saith, I know him, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. 1 John 2:4. That's losing one devilish loophole. The carnal mind takes hold of another, determined to serve the devil and deceive himself. And with his nose in the air, he utters the word, we are not to keep the law according unto the letter, but according unto the Spirit. For the letter killeth, but the Spirit giveth life. His misconception of what truth is leads him to believe that to keep the law according unto the Spirit, he must disregard the written word of Yahweh and keep the divine law according unto his own ways, and in the harmony with his carnal mind, making a void of Yahweh's own inscription, see Exodus 31:18, thus exacting the finite above the infinite. What greater blasphemy can one commit? We give here a brief explanation of the subject. To keep the law according unto the letter is to build a wall around it, as the proud Pharisees did. We quote, I John, 1 John 3:15. Whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. Therefore, though we kill not and yet hate our brother, we have kept the law blameless. We have kept the law blameless. According unto the letter, but not according to the Spirit. For the keeping of the law according unto the Spirit has a broader significance than the carnal mind can conceive. If I must keep the whole law, I must keep the whole word of Yahweh in every respect. Otherwise, I would dishonor him and would become a transgressor of the law, as a disobedient son dishonors his earthly father and becomes guilty of the fifth commandment and the law. Are we saved by the law? No, indeed. We are judged by the law. So, if we willfully disobey the word of Yahweh, we fall under the condemnation of the law. For if we sin willfully, after that we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for the sin. Hebrews 10:26. But if we love the righteousness of Yahweh as expressed in His law and determine to obey His holy word, wherever found, Bible or spirit of prophecy, according to the revelation by His Spirit, then we receive the power which enables us to fulfill the divine purpose, and thereby our sins are blotted out by the blood of Yeshua, and thus we are made free from the law of His condemnation. Placed under the divine grace, it is true that people like to be deceived, flattering themselves that they are on the way to heaven, while Satan winks at their ignorance. The word of Yahweh said, "And many shall follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of the truth shall be evil spoken of. But these, as natural brute beasts, made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of the things that they understand not, and shall utterly perish in their own corruption." 2 Peter 2:2-12. This proves how sectarianism sprung up, as it has been proven and generally accepted, that the seven churches of the Revelation, chapters 2 and 3, represented the history of the congregation in the apostolic era. It is evident that the congregation was split in seven sections, Laodicea sin being the last. She is also in danger of the falling according unto the testimonies of the true witness. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold in her heart, I will spew thee out of my mouth. He's talking about the angel of a candlestick of Laodicea, Revelation 3:16. Yahweh has sent message after message to give light upon His witness, or His written word. They were in, well, I have a point to make right here. When Willis Johnson was discharged from his duties in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, then that was a sign of the discharging of the whole Seventh-day Adventist Church. Let's go ahead. Let's continue. They were intended to correct error, rebuke sin, and reprove the sinner. But the leaders of each section threw out the messages, and the few who were willing to sacrifice all for the truth were forced to part from the churches and march on with the light. Were the leaders willing to correct their errors and purify the church, there would have been but one section. By the denial of the truth, each section cut itself off from the mighty arm of Yahweh. Thus, not one of these churches have had additional light on the Scriptures other than that which was imparted unto them by the founders of each movement. For the fact proves the prophetic word of Yahweh correct, and the older the section, the greater the condemnation. Therefore, these churches are represented by the heads. The blasphemy over them denotes their fall. Should they refuse this last call also, then the revelation of these facts would be against them and will bring their final ruin. And they did reject that final call through Verlis Johnson 2002. And that's what brought the final ruin to the Adventist Church. This brings the close of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call at number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.
Wonder of wonder. Let me tell you this story about a long time ago. Of the prophecy made for the future to unfold. Not a man named Yahshua who came to his own, to live and to die. to rain on his throne. Wonder of wonder in heaven I show. Heavenly light shining all around me. Glory of glory in heaven is found. Oh, matchless love from heaven come down. He was a man who walked among men. He showed deliverance no matter of sin. He touched the heartstrings of men where they live. And with thunder in judgment he had power to forgive. He knows the plan of salvation by faith. Trail to glory you see, through the blood of the Lamb of the Calvary. Wonder of wonder in heaven I see, heavenly light shining all around me. Glory of glory in heaven is found, oh matchless love from heaven.